Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
It's not a total vaccine mandate, but it's pretty close. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday, today the 9th day of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There have been, shall we say, increasing calls for the Biden administration to do something about the alarming spread of the Delta variant. And today was apparently the day at the White House. This afternoon, President Biden announced a raft of new policies, including having the Labor Department order every company with 100 or more employees to make sure their employees are vaccinated or tested weekly. This is kind of a big deal. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here with the latest on this story. Hey, Mitchell.
Hey, Kai. Good to be here.
So, look, why now? What's the impetus here?
Well, you know, they've kind of run out of other options that might really move the needle and crush COVID so it doesn't keep spreading and mutating and overwhelming hospitals and, as we've been seeing, periodically ruining the economic recovery. So they've pushed vaccination and mask mandates. That hasn't been enough. And like banks are where the money is, you know, companies are where the workers are. So this could be a really effective way to target a lot of the remaining unvaccinated adults. They're in their prime working years. They're key to controlling this wave of Delta and preventing the next wave of whatever Greek letter COVID comes next. The Biden administration says it would cover 80 million private sector workers.
I think it's Mu is the next variant. But let me ask you this. There will be pushback. I think there already have been statements from labor groups. Is this legal? Is it feasible? How are they going to do this?
There will surely be challenges, and there have already to, you know, more local mask and vaccine, especially vaccine mandates. It'll probably hold up legally. The vaccines are on their way all to getting full FDA approval. You know, we already require all manner of vaccines for kids to go to school, and vaccine mandates are already in place for a lot of government workers, hospital and nursing home, and school workers.
I don't need to point out that there were some logistical hurdles with getting vaccines out. We've been stop and go on the boosters. There's a actually getting shots in people's arms aspect to this thing as well, yeah?
Right. You know, it's going to take a while to see if this all really works. There's going to be regulation and enforcement that'll come out of OSHA and the Department of Labor. It'll be something we'll watch. You know, there might be fines eventually for violators. The idea here is you have a lot of people who are still on the fence about vaccination, you know, could maybe be swayed. And a lot of them would be presumably more willing to get the shot or at least submit to regular testing if their actual livelihood depended on it. You know, it's also going to be controversial. A lot of people don't trust the vaccine. A lot of people don't like the government telling them what to stick in their arm or what they have to do to work. On the other hand, you know, a lot of employers might actually support this, at least if you ask them in private. A mandate kind of takes the responsibility out of their hands. You know, it's not me, it's the government making us do this. And less COVID risk means less financial and legal risk for them of their workers or their customers getting sick.
Right. And all of this comes as people are worrying now, as you said in the beginning, about Delta and the recovery. Mitchell Hartman covers, well, workforce and lots of stuff for us. Thank you, Mitchell.
Good to be there.
Talk to you soon. Should say, by the way, a bunch of other stuff in these orders that the president signed today, executive orders. Basically, two-thirds of the American workforce is covered in some way by what the White House is rolling out. On Wall Street today, four down days in a row, if you're keeping track. Details, numbers, all y'all know the drill, right? If you're running an airline here in the Delta variant late summer of 2021, well, you've had better days. Let me tell you that. A bit more than 1.4 million people flew commercial yesterday. It's been closer to 2 million for much of the summer. And United and American, JetBlue, Delta, and Southwest all said today they are tempering expectations for the fall as bookings go down and cancellations rise. Marketplace's Samantha Fields does a whole lot of aviation for us.
The end of summer pretty much always brings with it some drop in air travel.
The period between Labor Day and Thanksgiving is known in the airline industry as a shoulder season.
Henry Hardeveld is a travel industry analyst at Atmosphere Research Group. And he says what's different this fall
is that right now, of course, is the time when business people would normally be traveling. And we have far fewer people traveling for business today.
And since August, fewer people taking other kinds of trips, too. Richard Abulafia, an aviation analyst at Teal Group, says going into summer, air travel rebounded faster in the U.S. than in other parts of the world as vaccines rolled out and the country largely reopened.
The summer was looking great, but because of the, well, resurgence of the pandemic in the form of the Delta variant, that's having a very negative impact on travel. The recovery just isn't as robust as we had hoped for.
Now, Abulafia says, it's Europe that's seeing more of a bump.
They have simply been able to accept vaccine passports, a higher level of vaccination, and just a higher level of testing.
In the U.S., with fewer people booking trips, some airlines are starting to cut back on capacity again, cutting routes or moving to smaller planes. And Adit Damodaran, an economist at the travel site Hopper, says they're also cutting ticket prices, which had risen over the summer when most domestic flights were packed.
Airfare is dropping going into the fall for both domestic and international flights.
And that, he says, will be tempting for a lot of travelers. But right now, most people who are booking aren't doing it very far in advance, and a lot more of them are buying cancellation insurance. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Saturday is 20 years since the attacks of September 11th and all the changes that that day brought to our politics and this society and this economy. Some of them were big, the TSA just for one, some maybe not so big, but still enough to make us feel safe going back into office buildings. And they've been with us long enough now, those lesser changes, that a whole generation of workers in this economy has no idea that things used to be different. Marketplace's Matt Levin. Take us through one small legacy of September 11th that millions of people carry with us every day.
Three times a day, Melissa Van Hagen gets an email with what used to be a very long spreadsheet attached.
Ben, he came in and badged in at 9:28 in the morning. Somebody came in at 10:45, 11:44.
Ben and those somebodies at 10:45, 11, and 11:44 are employees still coming into the offices of PriMed Management Consulting, which does medical billing. Van Hagen is head of facilities. Right now we're heading onto the second floor of company headquarters in San Ramon, a San Francisco Bay Area suburb.
This mainly is made up of mostly IT people, but nobody's here. They're a group that does tend to work more remotely.
She didn't need to leave her office to find out that nobody from IT was in their office today. Every time an employee taps a key card, just like she did to open this door, they get added to the spreadsheet. Key cards and badges and visitor check-in systems are workplace fixtures now, just as ubiquitously annoying as the printer that always jams and the coworker who reheats fish in the microwave. But before 9/11...
The limit to security in a lot of places was probably just the receptionist, if anyone else.
Lisa Langsdorf was in her early 20s and interviewing for PR jobs in New York City in the summer and fall of 2000.
I wasn't exactly going to like any important meetings at the United Nations or at Goldman Sachs. I don't remember ever having to get my license photo on a sticker.
That all changed after the attacks. Visiting a friend in their office didn't feel all that different from visiting the UN Security Council.
You would actually have to send your stuff through an X-ray conveyor belt. You would get a little pass on a piece of paper, and then you could swipe that pass through.
The TSA approach was mostly a New York thing, but companies all over the country were installing turnstiles, hiring security guards, and looking for a way to protect their workplaces and their workers. The market for key cards and ID badges took off. Brandon Arsamaa is Senior Director of Strategy for HID, one of the leading players in the now $6 billion access control industry.
Certainly, it was an emotional time for all of us, and it was easier for business leaders to justify at the time investment in security.
Government was a big client. So were universities and hospitals and any place the newly formed Homeland Security Department deemed a soft target. Arsamaa admits some of it was more for show than for safety.
In some cases, it is security theater. The practical protection is little considering the investment that's given. But theater helps us feel more comfortable.
Being tracked and spreadsheeted, maybe not so comforting. Some workers thought a pocket-sized device that let your employer follow you through the office was a dangerous invasion of privacy. Those concerns largely went the way of the flip phone as more sophisticated surveillance took over. Still with us, though, this awkwardness.
We've been conditioned now that in the workplace, you shouldn't hold the door open on somebody. You see somebody walking up behind you and you close the door really quickly.
And 20 years on, people still aren't over what a mandatory company lanyard has done to their outfit.
You know, we occasionally get some comments on our social media channels, even today. And I just got my third HID card and moved to a new company. And one thing that I continue to hate is how it clashes with my clothes.
Remote work has allowed employees to put that fashion problem in a drawer for 18 months, but it's created a new headache for facility directors like Melissa Van Hagen.
Everybody's been working from home and everybody's decided to grow their hair long. So we had a gentleman come through and nobody recognized him.
In the end, Van Hagen says it was his badge that proved he was who he said he was. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Back to school is usually really big business for us.
Usually? That's not good. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials lost 151 points today, 0.4%, 34,879. The NASDAQ down 38 points, about 0.25%, finished at 15,248. The S&P 500 down 20 points, 0.4%, 44,093. We heard from Sam Fields about that airline story. In airline stocks today, well, lots of lift, shall we say. Delta up 3.6%, JetBlue up 4%, American Airlines up 5.5%. The Biden administration's vaccine news Mitchell gave us, some companies already on the vaccine mandate train. CVS down 0.9% today, Facebook up 0.1%, Citigroup up about 0.5%. Oil down today as China made clear it will tap its state oil reserves. ExxonMobil was flat. Chevron down about 0.4% today. Bond prices went up. That means the yield goes the other way. The 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.30%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We learned last week the unemployment rate in this economy is 5.2%. In that same report, though, the Bureau of Labor Statistics told us that the black unemployment rate in America was up to 8.8%. Fed Chair Jay Powell has been talking for years about that racial and ethnic employment gap and trying to narrow it by keeping interest rates low, the labor market hot, and the economy humming right along. Enter then Wendy Edelberg. She is the director of the Hamilton Project and a senior fellow at Brookings as well. And she is also the co-author of a recent post on the topic at hand. So we got her on the phone. Hey, Wendy, good to have you back.
Very happy to be here.
So I have to tell you, I read the headline on this blog post, which is, and this is a quote, "A hot labor market won't eliminate racial and ethnic unemployment gaps." And I thought to myself, it won't? So help me out here.
So indeed it won't. These are long-standing gaps, and they are largely there for structural reason and will require structural change to fully close.
Okay, so let's do a little background here. Number one, hot labor market. What exactly is that for the layperson in the audience?
So the way most people would experience a hot labor market is seeing a really low unemployment rate and employers trying to vie for people to come and work for them, and they'd see wage pressure. It's basically when you know that the workers have the advantage and not the firms.
Okay. And a hot labor market has historically helped Black and Hispanic workers, right? I mean, and that's part of the reason that Powell, he says this all the time, and he said it even before the pandemic. We got to keep the labor market hot because that helps people in the lower end of the income spectrum.
It absolutely does help. We've seen this. So in 2018 and 2019, we had what I would call a pretty hot labor market. Yeah. And indeed, the gaps in the unemployment rates between Black workers and white workers were reaching historic lows, way too high still, but quite low by historical standards. And then the pandemic hit and those gaps reopened. Yeah. All right. So now fast forward 18 months or so and the gaps have started to come down. But we can't rely on the cyclical pressure to do all the work for us. So yes, great benefits right after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. The difference between the unemployment rate for Black men and for white men was like 6 percentage points.
And
it is.
And now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to jump in. And now it's like 3.5 percentage points, right? So it has come down during the course of the pandemic. But look, Jay Powell, staring inflation in the face, is being pressured to raise interest rates. He's holding the line. Congress has done what it's going to do in this pandemic. Now what do we do?
Oh, geez. So that's a really big question. I think it's appropriate for monetary policy to remain really accommodative right now, particularly given what we're seeing with the Delta variant. Mm-hmm. But in not too long, in a couple of quarters, we will start to see our economy be unsustainably strong. So it's going to be time in the next few quarters to start letting the economy, you know, grow on its own 2 feet.
Right. And yeah, that's fair. Just as a refresher here, right? Monetary policy is interest rates and fiscal policy is taxing and spending by the government. But look, these structural challenges that you said at the beginning, what are they and how do we fix them?
So there's no shortage of ideas. One of the things that we need to do is make it as easy as possible for people to work. That includes paid leave. We need to make access to childcare easy and affordable. We need to make sure that we give people the access to education that they can benefit from to be successful in the labor market. Policymakers know what to do. They just need to do the hard work to do it.
Yeah, just to be clear here, none of those things you just mentioned are in the Federal Reserve's dual mandate of price stability and full employment, right? So we're talking Congress here.
We are absolutely talking Congress, which is why I thought this piece was important, yeah, because I think people are looking at monetary policymakers and hoping that they can run the economy hot enough to just do all this work for them so that fiscal policymakers don't have to put these structural changes in place that disproportionately help marginalized workers, workers of color, women. We need our fiscal policymakers to, do what we sent them to Congress to do. And yeah, monetary policymakers, they can run the economy hot for a while. So I absolutely don't want to get monetary policymakers off the hook. Fair. They have a role here, but they're not the whole show.
Wendy Edelberg is the director of the Hamilton Project, also a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution. Her blog post, which I started this interview with, is titled "A Hot Labor Market Won't Eliminate Racial and Ethnic Unemployment Gaps," and she just explained why. Wendy, thanks a lot. Really good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Amid all the economic uncertainty the pandemic has wrought, there was a note of success this week, a really important one, too. The number of households that were food insecure last year didn't go up. Yes, flat is good here. The report comes from the Department of Agriculture, but there is a bit more to the story, as Marketplace's Amanda Peacher reports.
In the pandemic early days, food banks saw long lines, and a lot of folks were in a scary, uncertain place. So the USDA report is good news, says Jim Sullivan, economics professor at Notre Dame. He says despite so many people losing work in 2020
and lots of struggles with the pandemic and health concerns, we don't see that overall food insecurity has increased.
What Sullivan calls sizable government relief is why. Pandemic unemployment benefits and stimulus checks, also more access to food through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
There was actually an increase in SNAP benefits.
Ellie Agar is with Hunger Free Colorado. Aid efforts did try to lend extra support to households with kids, but sometimes getting food meant, for example, having to drive to a brown bag meal pickup, hard for families without a car.
That's something that family is not going to be able to access, even if it's offered.
That kind of challenge is why households with children were the one group that did experience more food insecurity last year. Many families had to turn to food pantries when they lost a job or hours were cut. Kelly Durrett with the Mississippi Food Network says some of them just barely didn't qualify for SNAP.
They were just a little over the threshold of making too much money or having too much income, but they still don't have enough food to feed their families.
Even for those who do get assistance, there is what some call a benefits cliff coming this fall. Pandemic unemployment benefits for parents who couldn't work or gig workers ended on Labor Day, and others like the extra SNAP benefits are due to expire this month. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
School's back in session pretty much everywhere now after a year, maybe a year and a half of classes online. So more normal, if not completely normal. The same applies, that not completely normal thing, for all the businesses that rely on back-to-school shopping season, including this one in today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Jennifer Bergman. I'm the owner of Westside Kids, and we're located on the Upper West Side of New York City. We're a specialty toy store. My mother opened Westside Kids in 1981, and we carry everything from Lego and dolls and arts and crafts and science and baby toys. And our clients are parents and grandparents from all walks of life. We were really worried. If you had asked me last spring if we would survive this, I may have said no. But then by the fall, things were a little better. I was feeling a little bit more optimistic. And back to school is usually really big business for us. Now we would be selling a lot of like fun pencils and fidget toys and just sort of, you know, the fun things that kids like to take to school. And then in September, it's a big birthday month. And so we would have really, really busy weekends selling birthday presents. The back-to-school business this year is very different than it has been in the previous years. Things are a lot quieter than they normally are. We actually aren't selling that many backpacks and lunch bags and school supplies that we have. There isn't that back-to-school energy in the city yet. I think everyone is very hesitant and worried. We're not seeing that many kids in the store yet. And so it's really a wait-and-see game. We're keeping a very close eye on the Delta variant, but we're definitely more optimistic about business than we were last year at this time. I really have to have a positive outlook. Otherwise, you know, can you get out of bed in the morning? I feel like the only thing we can do is be thankful for the business that we do have. And so I'm keeping my store full of toys and we'll just go from there.
Jennifer Bergman, she runs a toy store in New York City. This series does not happen without you, you know, your stories as well. So if you would share them with us, we would be obliged. You can do that at marketplace.org/myeconomy. Final note on the way out today, which falls firmly in the you learn something new every day in this job. You know those sauce packets you get at some fast food drive-thrus, Taco Bell specifically? The company says consumers go through 8 billion of those packages every year, not just Taco Bell consumers, to be clear, but all of us at all the drive-thrus. Anyway, the company's got a plan. Working with a recycling specialty company, it wants people to collect all those used packets from your drive-thru dining experiences and mail them back. They will then melt them down and repurpose them into something else, which I think is cool. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context, just because I couldn't not. Remember the Ever Given, the cargo ship that clogged the Suez Canal for like a week back in March to the tune of $10 billion a day in cargo losses? Well, it happened again overnight. Not the Ever Given. A ship called the Coral Crystal got sideways in one lane of the two-lane part of the canal. Got unstuck after an hour, so no harm, no foul. But I'm telling you, the global economy, kind of fragile. Amir Mbawe, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do
the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.